Hello, my ill-behaved listeners, and welcome to the December edition of Ill-Behaved Women. I'm your host, unabashed, lowbrow culture fan, and author of the Queen Pin Chronicles trilogy. Every month, I try to bring you insight into my favorite ill-behaved women. Why? Because history is already littered with the untold stories of the well-behaved. This month, I'm going to share a special excerpt from my forthcoming book, highlight a news anchor I love for clapping back at a viewer email, and once again, give a shout out to Melinda French Gates. So I want to start things off by talking about my own rebellion, little rebellion. I always knew I wanted to be a writer, but it was always important to me that my work be read. I never had any interest in spending my whole life just tapping away at the great American novel that would be discovered posthumously. So to start, I went into journalism school, not English. It just so happened that life events conspired to compel me to write memoirs. And I'll tell you why, not because I thought that my story, my personal experience was so incredible. It was just what was happening to me in the cases that formed the nugget of each book is that I felt it was indicative of the female experience in that era. So the first one, it was all about getting a divorce. I just so happened to be living in one of the world's most patriarchal cultures, Qatar. That book became American Lady Creature, which is how I felt like people were always looking at me there. Hello and welcome, naturally subordinate female lady creature. The second one is about the long, twisty journey I went on to once and for all get off that never-ending hamster wheel of wellness culture. That one's called Blissful Thinking. Check it out. Now, here's the thing. There is a 7-year gap between those two books. 7 years. That's how slow traditional publishing is. It's not sustainable. That's not a career. Yet, for the majority of my life, I was okay with that. I thought, well, I'll suffer over here trying to earn a living while writing in my so-called spare time. But during that 7-year stretch, I really started thinking the second memoir was never going to come out. And I got the idea to fictionalize parts of the story and write scripts about the experiences that I had had. And you know what? Those scripts went on to be produced, get shown in film festivals, and win awards. Maybe I was better at fiction. So I had this idea for the Queen Pin Chronicles that was based on this troupe of touring swimsuit models that I discovered went around the country on a promotional tour between the 1930s and 1960s right out of St. Petersburg. Now, here's the thing. That time period includes World War II, during which time we were at war and travel was restricted. The other thing, how were these women getting rations to travel, essentially, was my question. So the other thing, not long after moving to St. Pete, I had heard this wacky promotional story about a guru who made up a controversy, completely made it up, about the teeny tiny bathing costumes in Florida. This ensured that Florida beaches were top on the list for pleasure-seeking vacationers around the country. Clearly, Florida has a long history with shady promoters. Anyway, when I started to do this research, the first people that I came across were the men. So, you know, my initial ideas for the book were based on what I found out about those men. And I was writing these stories. I was about, 8 chapters in when all of a sudden this character, Kathleen Young, appears on the page. I mean, I had to make up some women, right? Because there weren't any in the books. She was right away way more interesting. And pretty soon, a whole cast of female characters took over. And I completely ditched those first 8 chapters, boiled them down into the 2-page memoir or prologue that's in the beginning of that book. The other thing when I started, I wasn't even sure I could write a whole book. So when I was done, I gave the book to some trusted readers to ask for their opinion. And unanimously, they said I needed to find an agent and get the book published, which is the traditional route. So I went back to the drawing board. I tried timidly to get an agent. I was sending out these meticulously researched letters to agents, finding out what they'd published. I'd read their books. I'd figure out, was this somebody who's even going to like my book? Meanwhile, the memoir that I told you about before, it was on its way to being published. Now, it's pretty hard to write two books in a row that talk about – simultaneously, I should say, that talk about my journey of escaping the chains of oppression and a bunch of fictional women's journeys about escaping the chains of oppression and not see the irony that in my own life I was letting myself be pushed around by the publishing industry. In fact, there's still an agent out there who requested my book who hasn't gotten back to me yet. Well, I have news for her. My second book in the series is about to come out. It's Vegas Girls. Now, if you read Florida Girls, you'll remember Thelma Miles, one of the main characters in the book. In Vegas Girls, she is out for revenge, and so she heads to Las Vegas chasing after her nemesis, Sal Giancarlo. Sal is expanding his empire to this new market, and Thelma is determined to crush him. Okay, so I did a little fudging with the timeline because I wanted the action to be fast-paced and follow the previous book immediately. In fact, construction in Las Vegas did not get underway until 1946, but otherwise, they are besieged by the very elements that would have been problems for them during that time. So I want to give you an example of what I mean by reading the prologue to this book. So, Vegas Girls, prologue, 1945. At the start of World War II, President Franklin D. Roosevelt recognized the need for foreign intelligence gathering and so tapped General William Wild Bill Donovan, a decorated veteran of the First World War, to head up the Office of Strategic Services. The son of poor Irish immigrants, Donovan was somehow an Anglophile. He modeled his agency after British intelligence, right down to recruiting citizen spies, like Britain's Baker Street Irregulars. His roster read like a who's who of cultural elites, including film director John Ford, chef and author Julia Child, baseball player Mo Berg, and Henry and John Ringling North of the Ringling Brothers Circus. Perhaps this is why J. Edgar Hoover, head of the United States Internal Security, found the department a threat. He was all about appearances and playing politics. To undermine the influence of the OSS, Hoover used the news media to leak false allegations that the rival agency was creating an American Gestapo. Wild Bill was not in it for the publicity. He was more content in a war zone than desk-bound in D.C., and he didn't want to see his agents constrained either. With the demise of President Roosevelt, even Donovan could see the end coming. But he would not go down without a fight. Believing that his agency's ability to collect and analyze intelligence was key to the country's long-term stability, Donovan borrowed from another British technique. To undermine Hoover's influence, he instructed Special Agent Theodore Nelson, on the heels of his success in Florida, to expose organized criminals working openly within the U.S., unaware of just how deeply they'd infiltrated the system. The OSS was shuttered by the Truman administration less than a month after the war's official end. His mission in Las Vegas, however, was not a failure. Not if you were Thelma Miles or Kathleen Young, taking up the fight as Vegas girls. Hired as pawns, they became the ultimate power brokers. This is their story. So, this is how I like to play with things. Was there competition between these two agencies, the OSS and the FBI? Absolutely. Was it as cutthroat as I make it out to be here? Yes. I mean, Hoover went on a full-scale PR battle attacking Bill Donovan and his agency. However, did Bill Donovan try to set up an American crisis in order to save his agency? Well, that part is made up. Although, based on my own experience working for a government agency, I can't tell you which one, but I can say that's exactly the kind of bureaucracy that goes on all the time, trying to undercut and undermine anybody else who might be a threat to your budget. Anyway, this book comes out January 3rd, 2025, everywhere, and it is independently published. But Tombolo Books has invited me to be their special guest at their 5th anniversary birthday bash, and in honor of that occasion, I managed to crank out some copies to sign there. Join us this Saturday, December 14th, starting at 5:30 p.m. It's going to be a whole holiday night market in the courtyard. There'll be a hot cocoa bar from Black Crow Coffee, cards and calendars printed from St. Pete Printing, a tarot reading, or reader, I should say, giving readings, holiday treats, cocktails, holiday apparel. I don't even know what holiday apparel quite means, but I cannot wait to find out, and I would love to meet you there. Oh, I'm also going to be doing a special Belita giveaway. Again, if you read Florida Girls, or even if not, you may or may not know what Belita is. Belita was a lottery game brought here by the Cubans at the turn of the 20th century and quickly stolen from them by the mafia, who then proceeded to fight to the death about it for many, many years. And it figures heavily into Florida Girls. And at one of the book clubs that I went to, the book club made a mock Belita game, and we did a drawing, and I gave away a book to the winner of the drawing. Basically, you put 100 numbered balls into a bag, and you pick out a winner. Now, the mafia, they were very crooked about how they did this. They would sand them, they would freeze them, they would put lead weights on them, all to make sure that they picked the number that they wanted. But still, you could get in for pennies and out for pounds. It was an irresistible lure to people wanting to get rich quick back in the 1910s, 20s, 30s. And, oh, the lottery still exists today. Anyway, I'll be doing a Belita game to give away a blind date with a book. You can check that out on social media. I did one last night at Nerd Night. Anyway, now I want to change tracks a little bit just to talk about another ill-behaved woman who I came across this very morning on Instagram. She's a news anchor out of Calgary who clapped back at a viewer who actually took the time to send an email congratulating her on her pregnancy and saying, and I quote, "Congratulations on your pregnancy. If you're going to wear old man bus driver pants like that, you've got to expect these kinds of emails." No, sir. No, she does not. And I would say keep your emails in your own bus driver pants. And her response was next level withering. She was absolutely brilliant. And I invite you to check it out on my Instagram stories at LL Kirshner Author. That's LLKIRCH. N as in naughty, ER Author, to see it or Google it. Anyway, finally, I want to talk about yet another Melinda French Gates initiative. This time, she is also clapping back at backlash against DEI. That's diversity, equity, and inclusion, if you don't know. I don't know why people have such a problem with this concept, but anyway, she's not going to take it. And as a wealthy-ass lady, she doesn't have to. She is doing God's work and putting money specifically into DEI that's specifically aimed at artificial intelligence. I cannot express how important this is. Because why? The patriarchy has already embedded itself into artificial intelligence. How do I know this? Well, I will give you a very brief example. When I started working on the cover for Florida Girls, I asked an artificial intelligence design program for some help with images. I got a rotating slideshow of scantily clad, very buxom, very teeny tiny waisted women. There's one thing that you are never going to see on my covers, unless it's some kind of deep joke, which I can't even imagine I'd be making, but that is buxom, scantily clad women with teeny tiny waistlines. No woman who needs to get out there and take numbers is doing it in a skin-tight crop top. Okay, maybe she is, and I applaud her for that, but honestly, it is not the most practical of outfits if you need to be able to find your bullets quickly. And that's it for this month in ill-behaved women. Until next time, stay bold, stay curious, and never apologize for your ambitions. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, you can find me at llkirshner.com, or I'm on socials everywhere at llkirshnerauthor. That's LLKIRCH, N as in naughty, ER, author. Thank you for listening. This is Ill-Behaved LL Kirshner signing off.